Hello, 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 and welcome to this week's edition of the Kevin Ross Emery Show with
Ashley Olstein.
You know, last week I was on the other side, so I had to go like this.
I know, it feels backwards to me too.
No, they're messing with us. The tech gods are messing with us, but there's a reason for that. We've been having some technical difficulty, but I think everything is straightened out. Our guest is waiting in the wings, and we'll get to them in a minute. We want to kind of kick off with the astrology stuff. I do want to let people know that last week we announced that I was going to be at a fair on that Saturday in Newburyport. That fair has been moved to May 26th. It was canceled because of the ice, sleet, storm that came that everybody said, don't be on the road. So the fair got canceled. It got moved. As it's closer, we'll talk about it. But I just wanted to mention that that became a snow day. I haven't had a snow day for years. In fact, I don't even think it's the same snow anymore back from when I had snow days.
I used to get feet of snow and still have school.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, not anymore.
Absolutely. Yeah. Those parents threw you out the door in the snowbank and said, hoof it. Now they're like, oh, baby, might get their toes wet. They won't melt. So anyways, that said, I also, you know, we had some interesting feedback on our last show. I just want to take a second and address the fact that Raina, who was on the SIP with Soul Contracts, I know she said she felt like she was misrepresented. We went kind of back and forth. I just want to be very clear that, you know, that SIP will be available. I invite people to watch it. I was not trying to misrepresent anyone. That does not change the fact that, you know, we had the conversation last week. When I heard that term, it definitely, you know, created an energy in me. I was very honest about the energy. Nobody asked about the energy or commented to me, why do you feel that way? Or I disagree, or could you look at it like this? So I don't want to open up this can of worms and again, but I just want to say that, you know, Raina has been on a lot of SIPs and will continue to be on a lot of SIPs, and I respect her opinion. I don't have to agree with it. And she doesn't have to agree with mine. But nobody was trying to invalidate anybody else. That's not what SIP is about. Ashley, you've done many of them, so you know how that goes.
Yeah.
That said, because I wanted to address that, that was a little interesting energy. And I think, Ashley, you got a little side wish because you had the same reaction to the phrase that I did.
And you did. And I was vocal about it. And I feel like, you know, I respect Raina's opinion so much. And I wish that I was there for that conversation on that SIP, because it would have been an interesting one. But I feel the same way. I don't feel like I think you and I are a little more aligned, and that's fine. We can disagree, agree. I mean, it's all everyone's opinion. And you know what? We'll all find out later. We can see who's right later.
Yeah, and it's not really, actually, I don't think it's about right or wrong even.
I'm kidding. That's true. Yep. It's all wrong choice of words. You're right.
Different pathways.
Yep.
Different ways, different sunbeams that we travel to get to that big sun in the sky.
Correct.
So astrology, we're going to do a quick down and dirty astrology, and then we're going to have Ashley introduce tonight's guest. And so we have two things going on. And first of all, we're coming into a Mercury retrograde.
Oh, great.
Mark these dates in your calendar. It is April 1st to April 25th that Mercury will be retrograde, which means to the visual eye, it looks like Mercury is going backward in the sky. When the energy of a planet goes backward, it goes into what I call the rephase. It is to re-examine. It's to reconfigure. It is to review. It's almost like doing a little bit of a rewind in whatever energy that planet has in your chart. It's going retrograde in Aries, which is a planet that's all about forward movement. So when you have a Mercury planet that just likes to charge forward, and an Aries likes to charge forward, and they're charging forward, think of Ben-Hur and that chariot, and then suddenly somebody puts on the brakes and two of the wheels try to go backwards while the other two are still trying to go forwards. It can create a little bit of a feeling for a moment. If you have your chart handy, it's a nice time to pull it out and know that it's in 27 degrees of retrograde when it goes backwards. So again, for those of you who have your charts so that you can really apply this information to how it means in your life, you would be looking at where Aries is in your chart and then say, this is the area of my life where I'm going to be asked to look back on things, review things. Now, you don't have to be afraid of Mercury. Everybody goes, oh, it's a Mercury retrograde. The sky is falling. The sky is falling. Sky is not falling. It may just look like it's falling because it's in retrograde, but it's really not falling. Communication tends to get bound up a lot when it's external. Emails go astray. Letters get lost. People think they sent something and they didn't. It's a good time to double check on stuff. Make sure that, you know, somebody actually got the message you left. If you go, God, I left them a message a couple of days ago, and this is, they never don't get back to me. Assume Mercury has struck and reach back out. And they're going to go, no, I never saw it, or it didn't show up, or you send me email all the time and it went in my spam box. What's up with that? Mercury!
Right.
when you look into those areas of your life, that Mercury retrograde starts for you in your eighth house, which is, you know, kind of the transformational house of death and rebirth, or death and taxes, as some people say, but it is death and rebirth. And it's kind of examining and going inside, because your internal communication gets very clear. It's your external. You're going internal, and you should be able to look back. And if you invest the time in a Mercury retrograde to re-examine things, thought processes, stuff like that, it goes right from there all the way back into your seventh house of partnerships, Ashley. So
always, it all goes back to partnerships.
And it's all going to go back into there. And this is the time to rethink things. What it is not a time to do is to take new actions. When Mercury is retrograde, it's a time to recover, to again re-examine, to think things through, decide what isn't working or what you need to change. But you want to wait until a couple of days after that Mercury goes direct before you start to implement anything. Now, for me, it's going to be retrograde in my fourth house. And it's, you know, which is the house of home. It's going to actually start in my fifth house of creativity. And it's going to back into my fourth house. I just got a text from my builder that they want to start my bathroom on Monday, which is starting it in a Mercury retrograde.
Oh boy.
But one of the things to keep in mind about a Mercury retrograde is you can go to the last retrograde, even the last couple of retrogrades, and check and see, were there things you were working out there that didn't get worked out? Because sometimes they will work themselves out in this retrograde. Understanding astrology and the layers and how it affects your chart just gives you another tool with which to make better decisions. Always remember that we call it planetary influences when we talk about astrology on this program, because the planets are going to influence you, but they're not going to make your decisions. You still get to make your choices. But if you look at your weather app and it says rain, and you look outside and there's clouds, which there are right now, and rain, then take an umbrella, prepare for it. And that's all we try to do when we share astrology. Now, the second thing, which is going to happen Monday, April 3rd, as a hard point, and I want people to understand the difference between the energy arc and the hard point. The energy arc actually for this starts today. But the energy arc is on the 3rd of April. And this is Neptune, Venus conjuncting Neptune in Pisces. And so when you look at Venus conjuncting Neptune in Pisces, it's an indication of the start of a new cycle. It's a time to plant seeds. It's an invitation to dream big without limits. Now, we always want to be careful because Neptune is a planet that can have a lot to do with illusion, delusion, not seeing things clearly. But when you actually reset it, your Neptunian dreams that may have actually not been clear or not really been your dreams, but may have been dreams that were given to you or you thought you were supposed to be achieving, will clear the way. And what shows up is almost always going to be a better dream than you ever thought of having. If you will push through Neptune, and with Venus, which we call one of the lesser benefic, there's a lesser benefic and a greater benefic, and the lesser benefic always gives it a little extra energy. So it says dream big, but make sure the dreams are yours and make sure that you're going into that energy. The arc of that energy starts on the 30th, which means you're going to start to feel it. It's going to peak on the 3rd, but it's really going to be around till April 6th. So there's this window where it's a good time to be dreaming big, to be looking at things. With Mercury retrograde, you should be taking those dreams and then looking and going, hey, how do I feel about those? How do those dreams kind of affect this Mercury that's going on, that's asking me to clarify, to clean up my internal dialogue, to get stronger within myself? So those are the two big things going on. I am going to, I always think I'm going to spend less time on astrology than I do. So I want to be moving to get to our guest. I am going to say that this conjunction energy for you, like for Ashley, it's going to be going over several planets and it's going to be going through your 6th and 7th house. So I mean, that energy is there. But it's time to break down limits and dream big. Now, if there's anybody that knows about dreaming big and actualizing big dreams and stepping up to the bigness that you are here to be, it is tonight's guest. And on that, I'm going to pass the introduction to Ashley.
Beautiful segue. So tonight we have Matt Gill joining us, and Matt is on a mission to wake up those who have fallen asleep or are starting to doze off spiritually through the power of their story. Wake up, Dr. Kim. Matt is clear that it is each person's journey that has the answers and solutions to creating a life that is whole and filled with the peace of mind that we long for. Matt has impacted over 40 million people worldwide, stepped on hundreds of stages, teaching and sharing the importance of owning your truth, sharing the journey, spreading love for oneself first, and then share that love to the world. So,
hello. I love listening to what you were saying about astrology, Kevin, and Ashley, is what you just said. What a beautiful segue into today's conversation.
Really was.
Well, we're gonna start calling you the Venus conjunct Neptune guy.
That's a lot of pressure. I'm not sure about that.
VCN guy.
Thank you guys for having me.
Matt, we hear a lot today about people living their story. We also even hear a lot about don't get caught in your story from a negative perspective. Like, mm-hmm. you're limiting yourself with your own story. And I think that some of our listeners out there, when they hear about the story, that there has been more energy and focus that I've observed over the last few years of people being told that their story limits them, that somehow they're stuck in their story like it's a bad thing. And right. So where I'd like to connect, kind of kick off tonight's interview is, can you delineate between that story that I'm sure a lot of our listeners have heard as, don't get stuck in your story. Don't let it like hold you back. Can you elaborate on the difference between those two?
Certainly. So, we all have we all have our journeys, aka our stories, our experiences. And many times we think of a storyline version. I was 6 years old and then this happened. I was 11 years old and then this happened. I was 14 and this time. I was 20. And we think of timeline versions of it. When we think of those experiences, we think about the technicalities of that experience versus the emotions of what took place. Our stories are the one thing that differentiate each and every one of us. Nobody else has your story. Nobody else has the experiences that you have had. And that's why you hear people like myself that are saying you need to share your story, because within your story are the solutions that you created for yourself and are the answers to solving other people's problems or their own issues or their challenges or whatever they're facing. When we think about people who get stuck in the story, it's because emotionally they have not healed from the pain of the story, the wound in their story. Too often people are stuck in the wound, and that wound then becomes their identity. I was touched inappropriately at 13 years old. I believe that I do not deserve love. And so therefore their identity is I don't trust either a man, I don't trust whoever that violator was. They develop a blockage of stopping their relationship from developing with other people. And so that becomes their identity as they get older. That's somebody who gets stuck. And until you actually address that pain and address that wound and heal from it, it's always going to become a part of you. Now, on the flip side, when you own your story, when you own the ugly parts of your story, and if you want to look into, when we think about even like generational pain, we hear of stories of things that have happened from, say, an uncle or a grandfather or somebody that happened many years ago, but nobody in the family wants to talk about it. It's like that hush secret. So that pain, that wound continues from the grandmother, then goes to the daughter. Then that daughter goes through and she has her kids, and that pain and that secret continues on because nobody has broken that curse. Nobody has broken that and spoken to the pain and the hurt. Does that make sense?
Very much.
So yeah. You're staying stuck in that moment. And so the when you hear people like myself that are saying you need to go to the ugly parts of your story, the truth of your story, that's when the healing happens. That's when you're able to move from being in your story to standing on your story.
So would it be fair if I, my head just went boop. One is, I kind of look at it as the thread that doesn't get woven in versus the thread that does. The thread that gets woven in creates a pattern that is the pattern of who you are. The thread that doesn't get woven in, you keep on getting stuck on. You keep on tripping over. I mean, if you think about a rug thread, you would keep tripping over it every time you walked over that because it's not woven in. It hasn't become part of that. And so we will always look at the thread that's out of loop instead of all the ones that are. And I would even challenge a little here, because that's one of the things we like to do here, Matt.
Mm-hmm. I love it, go for it.
It's not just the ugly parts of your story. You know, in my decades of working with individuals around these kind of issues, sometimes we can't accept the beauty of the story.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just looking at it out the, it's bringing everything out of a lens that has become warped.
Correct.
And returning that and finding, hey, there was a lot of beauty. It's like the person that said, oh, nothing ever good happened in my childhood, and therefore nothing good will ever happen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you make sure that happens. We are great at making sure we do self-fulfilling prophecies.
Correct. Well, and quite honestly, people aren't willing to, they can't see they can't see the good yet because they're so stuck in the dark. They can't see the light. They know that there's light, but they haven't experienced that light. They hear other people talking about it, but they haven't felt that in a very long time. And so they're so disconnected from what joy, from what happiness is, because they're stuck in their, that's where the stuck in your story is. They haven't healed. They haven't pushed through that moment. And the truth of the matter is, owning your story is not a very easy journey. Owning your story requires you to look at the mirror and really say, what part did I play in this? Because the truth is, if we were to bring the example of being sexually assaulted or molested or whatever that may be, that's something that, especially as a child, that child didn't have control over that situation. But as an adult, they still carry it. And the truth is, there are conversations of the adults that were in that situation that did not stand up for that kid. I know, and I've personally heard of stories of people who told their parents, so-and-so did this, and the parent defended the accuser, did not even believe their own child. So not only do you have the trauma of the sexual molestation or the inappropriateness in there, but now you have somebody that you were supposed to trust that was supposed to defend you that wasn't there. Now you have two different traumas that you're dealing with. And to go back as an adult and deal with that, especially when that person that did not defend you or stand up for you is still in your life, that's not easy, but it's required. That's the healing. And that's the part that most people are not willing to go through.
Well, and part of this is also, I don't think we can ever do true forgiveness without understanding. And when I have unraveled multi-generational things like sexual abuse, molestation, things like this, the person more often than not that I have found in my work in this area, in this field, was somebody who had not owned or healed their molestation. And if they recognized their child's molestation, then they had to go back to their molested child, which they had kept hidden in the closet.
For sure.
And it, you know, we find this repeated pattern, everything from molestation, pedophilia, even bullying, all of this stuff is, it's the victim that becomes either the perpetrator or the enabler of the perpetrator because the generational healing was never done.
Right.
When we go through that process and we're pulling that thread out to look at it, we have to be prepared that that thread is going maybe tied right around our perpetrator's throat, and we're pulling their thread out at the same time. And so, you know, I find it disturbing at times how black and white people want to make this, like, this person had the black hat and this person had the white hat, and
right,
you know, and we're going to enable this person to spend their life as a victim, and we're going to villainize this person for their whole life and not recognize that it was all gray in between.
Right. Yes. And each person's journey is going to be very different in how they get there. But the truth is that you still have to own your story. You still have to be able to get to a place where you are like, this hurts. This is difficult. It's the part that we have put in a little box and put inside up in the closet, and we think that we're never going to face, but it's always there. Now you can take it off. And this is where owning your story comes in, of you being able to take this box, take this experience, and then stand on it and teach from it. And when I say teach, I don't necessarily mean from a stage or in front of a classroom. I mean, talk to your daughter, talk to your son, teach somebody else from this experience so that they become a better human, so that they have a better life, so that they can experience a piece of joy.
So might I ask, what is your process for people? So say somebody wants to own their story. So it's not easy, obviously.
Right.
And can be very triggering to step into trauma and all of that. Not every story is traumatic, but we're just using trauma-based examples here. So how does that process work? How does one get from here to there and be okay?
For sure. The first part is really just understanding that it's being willing to tell the story that you're afraid of, that mm-hmm. you're most afraid of. And when I say tell the story, you first have to tell it to yourself. You first have to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And that is the very first difficult step of owning what truly happened. Wait a minute, I remember this. And it's putting those pieces together and owning what truly happened. The next part is actually facing the truth, which means that could be facing other people that are in your household, other people that are a part of your family, other people that you're in a relationship that are part of that story. So for example, I grew up believing that in order for me to be validated or to be seen, I had to do for other people. And this started at a very young age. I didn't feel like I fit in. I didn't feel like people understood me. I didn't feel like I was like everybody else. And so I began to have to try to find ways for me to get people to like me or to accept me. I grew up in a very Christian Catholic home. I grew up in a space where my father was was working for LA County Fire Department. He was in a leadership role. He retired as the assistant fire chief for LA County Fire Department. So there were always eyes on us. We were a very public family within who we were being. And so I always felt like I was on. I was always having to make people happy. As I grew older, that showed up in high school. I was active in school. I was active putting on assemblies. I was involved in a lot of different things to stay and to do for people. As I went into the workforce, once again, I was the yes guy. I was the person that was making sure, yes, I'll do that. I'll take care of it for you. Because that's how I found my validation. It wasn't until the moment that I began to validate myself that things began to change. But I had to look at all of the dreams that I had put on hold, all of the times that I said yes when I really wanted to say no, all the times that I gave money to other people when I didn't even have the money to give because I wanted people to like me. I had to take ownership of that because those were decisions that I made. Phase two of beginning to truly own your story is taking ownership of how you played into this. And sometimes that is very difficult because it has you looking at the times that you made a decision that was out of integrity with yourself. Or you may have said one thing, but you really truly knew that you should have done this. Does that make sense? And so when you look at I was out of integrity because I could have made this decision, but I chose to do this, that's you taking the responsibility, as well as it also requires you to go through and to have conversations with some of the people. For example, when I came out publicly to my parents, or actually when I came out to the world, so here I am, stepping on stages around the world, impacting over 40 million people, teaching people how to love and how to love themselves, how to create better lives for themselves, but yet I had never publicly said that I was gay on any of the stages. And the reason why I didn't do that is because I never wanted to be the gay speaker. I did not want to be typecasted into one type of role. What I realize now is that I had the opportunity and the tools to heal other people and to give people a tool for them to heal, but I did not do it because I was living in fear of telling my story. I was managing other people's insecurities. And I missed moments. I started in the industry in the personal development industry, working with youth, teaching teens how to fall madly in love with themselves, how to make integrity-based decisions, how to put words to their feelings. And I know for a fact that our room were filled with those that are part of the LGBT community, and I did not reach them because I was not brave enough. I did not have the courage at the moment to tell the truth of my story. I danced around it. I said, you got to love yourself. But I never had the courage to say, listen, I am gay. My parents did not like it. My parents did not understand it. I never talked about the pain and the hurt that I felt. Shortly after, when I made the decision, so I had hired the CEO of a company, Do the Damn Thing. I hired her as my coach, my business coach. I had been working with Lisa Nichols and Motivating the Masses for 14 years. I was a creative director. I was a coach for the company. And I had decided that it was time for me to graduate and to move on and to my message to get out into the world. And I hired Tiffany as my coach. And the first thing she asked me, she's like, Matt, how many people know that you're gay? I was like, oh, I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't step on stage and say it, but I don't try to hide it. You know, if anybody ever asked, I'd be like, yeah, like it, that wasn't a problem. And she said, "You, that's okay. Because I said, I don't know how many. I've never done that. And so she's told me in a very direct way, if you are going to continue with me and you truly want to make an impact in the world, you have to come out publicly. You have to do it in a way that you can't ever take it back so that the world hears." And she said, "And if you're going to step on stage and be impacting people and helping people become better humans and doing what you say you want to do, you have to tell your story." And I'll tell you, I was scared out of my mind because I knew what was going to happen on the back end. I knew that there was going to be family members that didn't approve. I knew that there were going to be friends. I actually had taken on a contract to go speak at a church, like on March 5th. So I knew that potentially here I am, the keynote speaker for this event at a Christian, at a church. And here I am just coming out publicly and saying, everybody, I'm going against what their beliefs are. So I knew that there was a possibility that I was going to lose this contract. I was going to be asked not to come speak, but I had to be willing to do that for my freedom. Had I not taken that move on that day, I would not be here right now with you.
So I think one of the things there's a couple of things I want to kind of comment on here. And Ashley, feel free to jump in again whenever. Mm-hmm. You know, early on, as you were sharing that, you were talking about you have to look at those pieces and you have to own what happened. I do want to say to our viewers that you have to remember the you that was experiencing that was a younger version of yourself, a less evolved or mature version. It's a version of you that was taking in. And, you know, all I could think of is because, you know, we were kicking the word trauma around. Mm. And, you know, the traumatic and stuff like this. And oftentimes we as an adult will look back at something that happened to us as a child and put an adult set of eyes on it and say, it was really no big deal. Why was I so upset? Instead of realizing you have to own it from the point of the child. Right. And that gets missed a lot. And to kind of put it in a perspective that validates, you know, and it's going to sound, may sound odd, but, you know, one of all of the traumatic things that happened in my childhood, and there was a lot of them, one of the things that always stood out to me was that my parents, behind my back, gave away my dog. They said that my dog was going to go visit my brother who had moved out. Originally, the dog was his. The dog was his for a year, had been mine for like four because he had moved out three years. But that dog slept with me. I fed that dog. I took care of that dog. I was responsible for that dog. They said, oh, we're letting your brother take the dog because his girlfriend, who is allergic to dogs, is going away and he wanted to spend some time. And I said, okay. Then a few weeks passed and I go, when's the dog coming home? Oh, well, he had a chance to give him away and just to a family that really wanted him. And we felt like it was a better choice. So he's not coming home. When I had to confront my parents that how traumatic that was, they were like, it was a dog. And they tried to invalidate that to me as a child, who especially was growing up with a lot of abuse happening to me, that dog was a lifeline. Mm. Mm. So sometimes when we go back into our story and we try to put it in place, we have to remember who was the child. How would a child experience that? And that's why oftentimes when I work with clients, it's like, before you go start telling your story to everybody else, let's make sure you fully understand your story,
right?
Not just from the adult looking back. And I do see that there are times when people, not intentionally, it's accidental, but it happens, they do a great damage because they discover their story, but they didn't really flush it out. They didn't understand it completely. And they went out and their story starts coming out like bullets and machine guns to everybody else. And all this damage gets done. And then, oops, they realize, well, their story wasn't quite exactly how they remembered it initially. And there was other pieces. And so I think that it's great that we go back and look at our story, and we need to own our story, and we need to take our story out. I think it's very hard to do without help or support. I think you need to have the outside person, assuming like you, Matt, do this. I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wrong. Do this, you know. We have to go in and kind of hold the hand of the child and the adult and align them.
For sure.
So I just want to put that out there because I don't want somebody watching this and going, well, you know, I've been sitting on this part of my story forever. Now I'm going to call up and I'm going to blast my parents and blast my siblings. And I'm just going to go, okay, no, whoa. Mm-hmm. Sit and make sure you have completely owned and understood your story.
Yeah. And it's not an overnight thing.
No.
I look at, you know, I publicly came out on March 1st, 2020 at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And I'm still working through moments of, I didn't realize this part of my story. I had never thought of it that way. Like, but I'm at a place because I took that first step and was able to own that big piece of my story. I'm more whole as a human. And that's when you become whole and you heal, then you get to use your story in a way that's powerful, that's going to connect spirit to spirit, heart to heart. I just met with somebody earlier today and she was telling me about some amazing thing that she's doing, some like multi-million dollar projects that she's working on. And as I'm looking at all of these graphs and all of these things that she's showing, I was like, the one thing that I don't see here is I don't see you. I don't feel your heart. I don't see what that, like, you're doing some great things. I said, but the number one thing that you have to do is you have to get whole yourself first. And she's like, I've been spinning and I've been buffering and all these things haven't worked. I said, because you're not whole. In order for this to work, this has to be working. Your heart, your spirit.
It's that, are you running into your best self, or are you running away from the self you cannot handle? Because oftentimes that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
We can fix our spouse or fix our children or fix our workplace, or we can fix this. Maybe they will not see how broken I feel.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. And it's tough, but I hear what you're saying.
And I think a lot of people do that. They keep the plate spinning and, you know, work is good, kids are good, spouse is good, you know, do all of that. And then at some point, hopefully, they'll realize that they're not fulfilled in what they've got going on. And you really have to look inside for that fulfillment. And I think we all have, even if we had an idyllic childhood, an idyllic life, there is that generational trauma that I think just is happening. And this is the time to help take care of that.
And I think we need to expand the concept of generational trauma over not just your generational trauma of your bloodline, your DNA generational trauma.
Mm-hmm.
We are a country.
Yeah.
Generational trauma. We are a world of generational trauma.
Yes.
We have spent thousands of years trying to homogenize and pasteurize people into perfect little beings that are convinced that they're eternal damnation or they'll never be loved or all of this bullshit stuff if they don't fit into the homogenized, pasteurized little box that their parents can show off or their community can be proud of. You're going and taking care of everybody and doing everything. There's nobody else here that's ever gone through that, right, Ash? Okay. But you may think you had the idyllic childhood, though I have never met anybody who came to me and said, yeah, my life is falling apart and I don't know why I had the idyllic childhood. Usually that's a sign of
denial.
Your head in the sand.
They tell me.
Right.
But that you have to accept that the world in itself, humanity and our society inherently, especially since the advent of from the 50s on, have imposed impossible standards of perfection that is going to give anybody and everybody self-esteem and self-worth issues if they pay it all attention.
Yeah.
So tell us about Do the Damn Thing.
So Do the Damn Thing is a movement. Do the Damn Thing, we believe, we are on a mission to tap into the world's untapped potential using the power of story. We believe that everything starts with story, the solutions are in story, as we've been talking about. Do the Damn Thing is a reminder that either you're doing the damn thing or you're not. Either you're making moves in where you're going or you're not. And when you're not, why? Like, what is the reason that you're stopping? Now, a lot of times it goes right back to story. There's something in your story that is stopping you from following your dreams. You said at the very beginning, as you were going through the astrology section, you were like, dream big, but make sure the dream is yours. And that piece, I wrote that down because that was so delicious and such a great comment, because so many times we're building for other people.
Mm-hmm.
We're building their dreams, we're doing what they do. And then we think, okay, I'll do this, I'll work on me when I have extra time. And then we're in the office, we're at whatever, we're running late, then we gotta come home and we gotta get the kids in bed, get them ready for school, get their lives together, then get ourselves ready for the next business day. And by the end of the day, we're too damn tired to do anything. And so we're like, okay, I'll do it tomorrow. And then tomorrow turns into a month later. And then a month later turns into years later. And you haven't gotten close to what you wanna build. Do the damn thing is a reminder that you need to be doing the damn thing in your life every single day. You have to be making what we call boss moves, which means it's going to step you outside of your comfort zone. It's going to require you to push yourself further than you have pushed before.
You know, I put out a newsletter, and my March newsletter is, are you living the dream or somebody else's nightmare? And it's how we get to the, you know, be careful what you ask for, because you get it and realize it's not ever what I wanted.
Right.
Right. And it becomes a nightmare along the way. So the theme seems to be consistent. I'm sure you would love that article if you
want. Sure. I can't wait to read it.
I'll forward it to you after the show.
Yeah.
I really want to sign up on my newsletter. Who knows?
How do they do that?
That was dreams versus visions versus nightmares. It was a good article.
Wow. That's awesome.
So tell me how people find you, find Do the Damn Thing. You told us what you're out in the world doing, but give us a little snap of how do people, you know, take a bigger bite of Matt.
Yes. So the best way to get you to reach me or to learn about my world is following on the socials. I'm one of those that teach and show my personal life of what I'm doing, where I'm going, the random thoughts that come up late at night. Facebook is a great way to connect at Matt Gill Global on Facebook, or just Matt Gill is my personal page. On Instagram, Mateo Gill, M-A-T-E-O-G-I-L is my Instagram. Those are the fun places. That's where I have the most fun because the stories. DTDT Nation is where you can find out about Do the Damn Thing and where we're doing and what we're doing. Like I said, we are on a mission to tap into the world's untapped potential. This year, we are deep diving into story. We are helping more people. Tiffany turned 40 this year, and so she is helping 40 people, with radically helping 40 people with things that are just unheard of people who need the help, who are hungry for the healing and are ready to make a bigger impact with what they're doing. And so us as a company, we have taken on the same philosophy and want to help people. We are beginning a 36-week journey next month of helping people work through their story, or taking them through the different phases, owning, confronting, building with, how do you use your story? How do you use it in businesses or personal relationships or just healing in general? And I always say I'm a very heart-to-heart person. So I love in connections. I love things like this where we get to meet each other virtually. I love things in person. During COVID and during the quarantine, I missed that live interaction. And so just spending time and spending space are the two areas that I love the most.
Whether it's a covenant group at my church or whether it's a workshop or wherever, whenever I'm speaking or teaching or doing anything, at the end of it, I stand at the door and I go, not required, but hugs are free.
Way out. Yes.
And you know, it used to, I have to admit, I used to go on to I would stand in the doorway and say and just give people hugs, and then somebody was like, not politically correct, maybe everyone doesn't want to be hugged.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but everyone needs to be hugged.
Thanks.
He gives good hugs too.
Well, next time I'm in Phoenix, if you're there, I used to live in Phoenix. You're located in Phoenix.
But... Yes, sir. We are right in the heart of downtown. We're Footprint Center is two blocks away from us. The Convention Center is two blocks this way. So if you're ever in the Phoenix area, and actually stay in touch with us. If you go to dtdtnation.com and sign up for our newsletter in there, we are actually opening up a brand new space in here later this year that I'm super excited about, because it's everything story and a great place to come visit and to really get some of the help in your journey. And so I invite anybody to come and stop in.
Beautiful.
Well, and I will put myself out that if you're ever looking to bring any guest speakers in, let me know, because I think we're pretty harmonious, but we have a slightly different point of view, and sometimes that's helpful.
For sure. For sure.
So we want to thank you for coming on. We're going to let Matt return to Matt Gill Global, Facebook.com. Matt, it was delightful. I met Matt recently at a virtual networking event, and as soon as he stopped talking, I was like, you need to come on my show.
Yes. And I appreciate it. Thank you for allowing me to share space and time. What I do realize is that the one thing that none of us will ever get back is our time. And so thank you for sharing your heart. Thank you for what you do in the world. Thank you for how you are fighting for humanity. You are helping people find the peace of mind and the joy in their life. And thank you for all the hard work and the times that you have not heard the word thank you enough.
Well, thank you, Matt. It was so lovely to meet you. Thanks for sharing your light.
Amen. Thank you.
You're two for two. You will get every minute of it. Matt Gill, all of his contact information has been going at the bottom of the screen. It will also get posted later in the Facebook. I'm assuming the Facebook, LinkedIn. I don't know. I don't take care of that part of anything, but I know get posted. And Matt, keep us, you know, let us know what's going on. And if something new, exciting, bright, and shiny happens, and you have some new stories to bring us, you know how to contact me. Let me know. We'd love to have you back.
For sure. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Matt.
Okay. So, oh, goddess, are you watching?
Too bad you're not talking about me. It's the other goddess. It's behind the scenes.
So, what did you think?
Super interesting. I'd like to hear more. But it was a nice little introduction to what he's doing, and definitely in line with